In the news update for May the 16th, 2022, on this Monday early morning edition, part two. Continuing on with the Alex Jones Show Hour 2, and then we'll start with Sunday Night Live, the first part of it, a little bit of it. And then, of course, we're powered by XM Radio. We're also on the air, on the internet, and on FM radio stations across America. And we're also on podcasting catching platforms. If you're looking for us on your favorite popular podcasting platform where you consume your content, our podcast name is Top Headlines National and International News Stories. And that's where you can find the name of our podcast. And it's just like it sounds. There's no and. It's and, like the word and. So you want to put hot, Top Headlines National and International News Stories. Thanks for those who spread our links, pray about us, and share our content on your news feed. And, of course, it helps get more traction and telling people about us where we're found on Anchor. We're found on like platforms like Spotify, which is a huge platform. We're also on XM.com. We're on iHeartRadio. And we're on FM, too, as well, and Pocket FM and more. So, and even on real FM stations across America. So, please support us any way you can. And help us out with a donation if you can. We appreciate it. All right, let's get back to the show here. Michael DeSilva, yours truly on the Voice of Freedom, the true voice of freedom on the Freedom Network. Let's get right to it, folks.
Something here that, again, reiterates that this is not conspiracy theory. There are real conspiracies. We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the U.S. public believes is false. That was CIA Director William J. Casey, and the globalist agenda and initiative is on full throttle.
That's what's going on right now.
We know that race is a main catalyst of violence, anarchy, and distrust. David, WHO treaty, what do you think about it?
I think that six corporations control 90% of the media that is consumed here in the United States of America. So we don't really have choice. We have the illusion of choice.
Not true choice.
Therefore, the fact that, Royce, you weren't aware of this treaty situation, or that I didn't listen to Alex Jones for the last 15 years for all kinds of reasons, and suddenly I listened to him and I found out it was completely different than what I was led to believe it was. This is what you're talking about with this William Casey quote. This globalism issue has been going on for 2,000 years, but it really reached a high level of criticality after World War II. And in 1947, just after the war, our government under Harry Truman signed the World Health Organization original charter treaty. And we are a signatory to that treaty and we participated in it. We as a country saw the influence and the reach of the World Health Organization over the last several years as we suffered through this COVID-19 pandemic. Now, we find out maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I can only share with the audience what I understand. And the reason why I say what I understand is there's an almost complete blackout of information about this World Health Organization 75th convention, going back to their formation in 1947. This is a very interesting convention they're going to have in Geneva, Switzerland. The Biden administration, apparently, from what I've been able to discern, in January proposed amendments to the treaty, which would pass control of the U.S. governmental authority to the World Health Organization in the event that a global health crisis or pandemic was declared. And because the treaty is already in place, these amendments will be passed, and the United States is going to cede its sovereignty to a globalist World Health Organization, United Nations, world governance. So as Royce had said earlier in the broadcast, we're playing from the down position. We've lost control. And these amendments will take no action by our Congress, no ratification, no debate. From what I understand, that this will pass, that there is already a sufficient number of countries that are going to vote for this. And I just want the audience to understand that, you know, what's a health emergency? Could it be gun violence? Could it be an environmental crisis? Under what auspices will our control be transferred? But I want to say also, never fear, because this treaty is a piece of paper. I'm a political activist working in Minnesota. I work in the Republican Party. I believe that every person in this audience that we represent, the most aware, knowledgeable, and spiritually alive media audience on the planet Earth. And the first step, of course, is that awareness. But when you reach that awareness, we got to get active. I got active. I wasn't active for years. I abdicated my authority and trusted in other men to lead me and to govern my country. And I realized they're evil people. So because we have a constitution, because we have a political process, I am fully empowered by my constitution in the most lawful and in the most beautiful ways, using oratory and composition, to engage in a political process and speak to you, the audience, and encourage you with these words to please on Monday. Call, every one of you, call your local political unit. It's a precinct, it could be a basic political operating unit. You put your city in and you go Republican Party. I know some people don't like the Republican Party or they don't like the Democrat Party, but let's work within the party system, because that is the fastest and most powerful way that we, the people, can reclaim our government, which is our government of the people, by the people, for the people. And if we get involved and we work together as one family, one American family, we can remove these evil people, these globalist evil people, from our governance, take it back with sacred honor. And this WHO World Health Organization treaty can be ripped up by a new American government, and we can regain our freedom and our sovereignty and our sacred honor. Royce, I want to thank you for letting me say that. It's been weighing heavy on my heart. I want every person on Monday to get involved, every single listener.
Thank you for that motivational speech, and he couldn't be more right. We do have to take this government back. We are in the 12th hour. Right now is the time, and if we come together and we get active, we can take our country back. We cannot be nihilists. We cannot be hopeless. We have to do what we have to do in order to take America.
Ladies lost their job right now because a plant went down to Mexico. You know, that isn't going to make you feel better. And so what we have to do is to make sure that folks are trained for the jobs that are coming in now, because some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. And when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back, well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have? And usually the answer is, he doesn't have an answer. So what I've tried to do, what my administration's tried to do, is let's grow those manufacturing sectors like clean energy, some of these new technologies that are coming up. Let's focus on those. We've set up, for example, manufacturing hubs where we work with universities, local businesses, local governments to create research labs that can take something like 3D printing or nanotechnology or all kinds of stuff that I can't really explain, because, you know, scientists and really smart people know all about it, and said, let's invest in this so that when the new jobs come, they're coming here. But I got to tell you that the days when you just being willing to work hard, and you can now walk into a plant and suddenly there's going to be a job for you for 30 years or 40 years, That's just not going to be there for our kids.
The sine qua non of black bourgeoisie sellouts, Barack Obama. I just wanted to play that clip for you all that you can see what it looks like ex post facto for an elected official of the highest office in our country to stand before the American people in a town hall setting under the banner of a mainstream media institution like PBS and tell a complete lie. What he just admitted to there was to give over the sovereignty and the future of the American working class and American citizenship to a technocratic cabal. We have research labs. We have coalitions between universities and tech companies who deal in technology that I don't understand because they're smarter than me. That's scientism, folks. I want to bring back in David Penn for one final segment of thought right now to talk about nationalism and globalism, because I see the two sides being God versus Satan, obviously, in the spiritual. Right. But politically, at the highest level, we're talking about nationalism versus globalism. And David Penn, you were a former international businessman and still are an international businessman yourself. And as you and I have said before and then discussed and agreed upon, and I have said on this show, that America was supposed to be a nation of shopkeepers, that the Second Amendment paired with the entrepreneur, the independent business owner, created a safeguard against economic imperialism. And we see that those safeguards are being warred against every day. And the effort to take our Second Amendment rights is on the move, but also the attempt to tear apart the middle class, but also the middle market. So I want to give you the last 5 minutes of this segment to talk about your thoughts on the middle market, because I think a lot of people don't understand that the independent entrepreneur in this country is really one of the biggest targets of the globalist elite.
Royce, you're exactly correct. And the reason why that is the people that are in the middle market, the independent business people that, like myself, I slept in a car when I was 17 years old. I didn't get any money from my family. I dug it out of the side of a mountain with my hands, breaking my fingers. Those people that have worked their lifetime to create their own reality, it's because of our freedom. We have freedom to create. And we also have thanksgiving and gratefulness, many of us, if not most of us, because we know there's a great deal of divine providence involved with actually succeeding as an entrepreneur. Every day, you're really depending on yourself. And if you're really smart about it, you recognize you're really depending on God. And, you know, not to pass this by, globalism and nationalism are two ends of the same system. We've waxed and waned between globalism and nationalism for 2,000 years. It's not globalism per se that's evil. It's the faithlessness of the globalists that's evil. We could have a faithless nationalist government that was corrupt. And in fact, it was the nationalism of the Third Reich and of Japan in the World War II period, which really discredited nationalism and led to this kind of globalist architecture. It justified creating global governance. And the story was that through global governance, we would avoid Holocausts like we suffered in the World War II period. But because the globalists themselves, the people that want to lead this, are faithless, they're secular humanists. They don't believe in the sanctity of life. They're not capable of governing the world in a beautiful human-centered way. And
David, as you and I have discussed, and we agree upon that, in order to have freedom, you have to have self-governance. But in order to have self-governance, you have to have faith. And I think it was St. Thomas Aquinas that said, it's not law and order that we want; it's peace and order.
Right.
Peace and order, and man can have peace when he submits his passions to his reasons and his reason to God. And if you can have peace within self, then you can have peace with others, and thus you create order. I understand what you're saying about globalism not being the issue per se, but I have told you before that it is my opinion that borders in a post mapped out world where there is no new land to go venture to, that the borders actually place humble constraints on man's ambition to conquer. That at one point the impetus towards imperialism or colonialism or globalism, the early stages of globalism, are constrained by nation states and sovereign borders. And I think it's a very technical philosophical argument to understand the mechanism culturally on man's ambitions and from a psychological standpoint, that it's not for you to conquer the entire world. And it's not that humans can't come together in a collaborative effort, to have peace and accord across this great nation. But that oftentimes, especially in our time and for the last 60 to 70 years since after World War II, we have seen many of those efforts be corrupted right down to the bone. Your thoughts?
And I want to say, Royce, that person in the same sentiment, it's the middle market business people, the small businessman, that is a limit to the ambition of the globalist corporation. That's why such a great effort is being made to get rid of the middle market, because we're generally believers in God and we're there to serve. We're not crass materialists just talking about price. We're there for our customers. We're there for our employees. We go about our business with love. And that is an affront to the globalists. So
understand what David Penn is saying right here. And David, we thank you for your time today and joining us and sharing your insights. And hopefully when I get the guest host in the future, we can have you back as well. Godspeed, brother. I appreciate your time. But I want everybody to understand what Brother Penn is saying right now. He is saying, do not be misguided into believing that your ability to own something, whether it be a piece of property, your car, a business that creates, do not be misled into believing that those things are inherently evil, that in fact, the independent business owner is a bastion against the globalists that we come to despise. And Alex Jones is one, David Penn is one. Am I coming in now? I am your host, Royce White, finishing up the bottom of the hour here with InfoWars, and I appreciate Alex Jones and the entire InfoWars team for allowing me to host the mothership for the past 2 hours. Thank you to David Penn and his time that he shared with us today and his insights. Thank you to Alex as well for dropping in and doing some live work during the broadcast. To finish up here, I want to talk about the end game, Satan's end game. And I talk about the spiritual a lot because I believe that the spiritual is where we can go to start to rebuild this nation and this world in the proper way. They say that politics is downstream from culture. Well, culture is downstream from the spiritual. And we have a spiritual rot. We have a spiritual decay. And I think, like I said earlier, you know, Democrats and Republicans alike have been guilty of trading our sovereignty, our freedoms, our citizenship over to a corrupt elite. And you have two distinct differences between the Republican trade-off and the Democrat trade-off. In my opinion, many Republicans traded their freedoms for security. The Democrats traded their freedoms for material, radical materialism, a material high. But it's in effect, it's the same thing. And that impetus is how we ended up with a centrist globalist uniparty that is doing Satan's work. And they are doing Satan's work. But even they are a little in the dark, I believe, about what Satan's real agenda is. Some of them are just Satanists. And I want to talk about the Satanists and the Satanist agenda. It's my belief that Satan's game that he's playing right now is to make God so angry that he just destroys the entire thing. That's the end game, ladies and gentlemen. To make God so upset, so sad, so disgusted with the way the world has turned out, with what people have become, with the way we treat each other, with the way we revere his blessings, his gifts, children being first and foremost, that he just says, up, time to reset. It's over. Time to start again. And you can see this impetus on the left in that, you know, it's one thing to kill other people. And during World War II, we did a lot of killing of other people, and we've done so ever since, despite any of these globalist collaboratives to try and upend geopolitical conflict and wars and military deaths. What we see, in fact, is that people have become more prone to killing themselves, whether it be physically, spiritually, health-wise, informationally. Many people have bought in, have signed up for the decay. And I told my friend David earlier when we were talking before we jumped on air that, you know, yes, the elites are corrupt. There's no doubt about that. Yes, they have for generations conspired to undermine citizenship, to undermine freedom, faith, God, all of the ideas that we hold true, dignity, humility. The list goes on. But ultimately, you get the government you deserve. Every constituency of people around the world, the free people of the world, have gotten the government that we deserve. Because we didn't want to stand up. We didn't want to be Alex Jones. Now, many of us are fans of Alex, and we respect Alex, and we're grateful for him. But we'd be all lying if we didn't admit that there are certain circles, certain places, certain times in our daily lives or throughout our life where we were afraid. We were afraid to admit to watching Alex Jones. We were afraid to admit that we believed the things Alex Jones said. And I had an encounter like that not too recently with the Washington Post when they attempted to do a hit piece in which they associated me with Alex Jones and Steve Bannon and many others as being far right or an extremist. And I told the journalist of that article that I'm not ashamed that I admire Alex Jones. I'm not ashamed to call Alex Jones an American hero. I believe he's an American hero. I believe it to the point where I'm willing to admit it in any circles. I tell as many people as I can that they should listen to Alex Jones and InfoWars if they want to understand a 30,000 foot view of what humanity and society face today. And he has been one of the few that have been willing to wrestle with the idea that Satan has a game, he has an initiative, he has an agenda, and he is playing it out through the political realm. He is playing it out through the corporatocracy, technocracy, technology, scientism, all of the many avenues that a supernatural being like Satan has at his disposal to play his wicked game of lies. But the first step to combating Satan is that we ourselves have to commit to not lie. And sure, people tell their white lies here and there, and we can argue about how consequential those lies are, but the reality is, in the places where it mattered most, in the places where we were commissioned by God to hold the line, to not bend the knee, to not capitulate, we did. We did, and we've done it for too long. There should be 1,000 people in the streets of every small community across this country, not up in arms and to create anarchy and chaos, but to march to the front door of the establishment and say, we want our country back. We want our lives back. We understand the value of our citizenship. We want our citizenship back. We want our ability to live closer to God back. We don't want all of these systemic, globalist, institutional, corrupt roadblocks standing in the way of our spiritual faith played out in the physical world. And much of that has happened. And much of it we let happen. Again, I believe Satan's end game is to make God so upset that he just erases the entire thing. God's winding up. And I go back to the sanctity of life because I believe that is the best example of how far we've fallen from the path. 40 to 50 million babies aborted every single year. I mean, let that sink in. Really let it sink in that we have conversations on a daily basis about minority groups who are endangered or at risk. Minority groups of whatever variety that are at risk, that are marginalized. Nobody has been more marginalized in this country's history than the unborn. The first action step to restoring our national honor and our sacred honor is to protect the citizenship of the unborn. And I said this online the other day, and I had somebody tell me, by definition, children who are not born are not citizens. This is the level of cognitive dissonance and corruption and evil that we are facing. But we have to become just as committed and action-oriented in our faith and our belief as they are in their disbelief and their non-faith. And we can do that. And we have to find enjoyment in that. We have to reject the material high. We have to reject the radical materialism that they have birthed and they have set in the center of the stage. We have to reject that in order to get back closer to the path, to get back closer to God. And in that, we can find the power and the strength and the courage and the clarity to reclaim our country, our citizenship, our sovereignty, to reclaim our ability to live as we want to live, close to God. I appreciate your time today. My name is Royce White. I am your guest host for InfoWars. I appreciate Alex Jones. I appreciate the entire InfoWars team for giving me a platform to speak to this audience. And it is the most awake, most spiritually alive audience in the entire world. RoyceWhite.us is my campaign website. Feel free to go and make a donation. I am running for United States Congress against Ilhan Omar. And the first thing we have to do is to take back our government through our elections. Please continue to support Alex Jones and InfoWars. Please follow me on social media. I'm on all social media for the time being, but I'm sure that time may be limited. I appreciate each and every one of you. God bless America. The time is now. We have to restore our national honor and our sacred honor. Thank you. Godspeed.
And I'm excited to join you this Sunday night. I think I'll open up the phone lines for you to call if you have anything to talk about. I don't know. Is anything going on? Anything of particular importance that you want to get into? Or should we just get into all of it all at once? You know, I was watching Owen talk about people like Bill Maher and Trevor Noah and their frustration that they are experiencing. Dang it. The embarrassing failure that their chosen candidate is, Joe Biden and his lackey Kamala Harris, who I don't know, it didn't work out so well. You know, it was amazing. Last week we had this article that was like, maybe this is Kamala Harris's time to shine. Like, yeah, maybe. Is this the way you want to operate government though? Is this really the time to take that risk? I mean, clearly the primaries, not her time to shine. No, she was an abysmal failure during the primaries. That was awful. They made her border czar, and she completely failed on that front. So you keep giving her really easy, simple, like T-ball kind of things to do, and she strikes out. So I know what we can do. Send her over to deal with the world on the precipice of nuclear World War III. Maybe now it's time to shine. You know, it's insane. It's insane how these people operate. And I think the left, or the liberals, are sort of finally starting to at least symbolically understand this. But I wouldn't get my hopes up. I wouldn't get my hopes up because you realize who we're talking about here, right? You realize just how brainwashed they are. You realize it's not just going to take a year and a half of abysmal failure. I mean, think about the stuff they still support to this day. And the abject failure all of these things have been, and the ensuing catastrophes that have come about, they still aren't questioning it. There's still people wearing masks out there, folks. You think these people are going to wake up to what a catastrophe the Democrats are while they're still wearing masks? No. There's very little hope right now. And, you know, it reminds me, I bring it up all the time, but it was one person in California who said something about somebody was being mean to his wife about wearing a mask, even though the science now had come around to the fact that masks didn't work anymore. And he said, you know, for the first time in my life, I've thought about voting Republican. And this was like a month ago, right? So this is 2 years into the pandemic. This is all of the catastrophes have unfolded, right? Defund the police not only caused a massive spike in crime, I'm talking thousands of extra murders across the country, thousands of lives snuffed short, thousands of, you know, families shattered and ruined. And has it decreased violence from the police? One iota? No, it hasn't. Not even a little bit. Not even a smidge. Just no downtick whatsoever in police killings. So it didn't do at all what you wanted it to do. It caused a host of other problems, kind of like lockdown, kind of like masks, kind of like the vaccine, kind of like everything these people support. But they still want to defund the police. They still think police killing is the number one issue. I'm sorry, not police killings. Police officers in America hunting black men for sport. That's what they think is real. Like, these people don't live in reality. It's going to take a hell of a lot more for them to get on board. And even then, they're still not going to get on board. Because you understand the way that these people operate is they succeed the more you fail. Okay? Now, Kamala Harris laughing during press conference. Humiliating for America. Just tack it on. Just another humiliation. Why not? And so it's like after 2 years of this, you got some people in California and others going, you know, I thought about voting Republican for the first time today. And you know what that means, right? That means for about 45 seconds, they went, oh, God, you know, I'll show these guys, all these liberals being mean to me. I'll vote for Republican before they went, oh, no, I could never do that. I can never vote for Republicans. I'm not a racist after all. So I'll be a good little Democrat after all. I'll just furrow my brow when I do it. You think Trevor Noah is going to. You think if he could go back in time, he would have voted for Trump? Like, this is really what you have to understand. Take that Trevor Noah clip, and we'll play it again in case you're just tuning in here. We'll play this real quick, and then we'll talk about it. Let's go to that Trevor Noah clip. I know you have it in here somewhere, right? Yeah, clip number one. Let's watch this, and then I'll explain exactly what's going on in the emptiness of this man's head. Let's watch.
There is no denying that Saudi Arabia isn't playing ball with Joe Biden. And you know what? You can say what you want, but this would have never happened to Donald Trump. Never. No one was ever ignoring Donald Trump's calls. Yeah, because if you ignored Donald Trump's calls, you didn't know how he would respond. Maybe he'd send an angry tweet, or maybe he'd just like ban your country from everything. You don't know. That's why I bet in these situations, Biden actually wishes that he could hire Trump to step in as president wildcard. You know, just keep everyone on their toes. Because if Trump was calling, you best believe the UAE, they'll be racing to pick up the phone. Oh, Mr. Trump, we're here. We're here. Hello?
Too late, Ahmed. You made me wait 2 rings. We're bombing the UAE and the UFC just in case.
See, right? He's still stupid, right? He's still stupid, a warmonger. So I'd love to ask Trevor Noah. So now that you recognize that Joe Biden is an abysmal failure and that his failures have not only bankrupted the entire country, the poorest are being hurt the most. Of course, I have the headline here. Inflation is now costing the average household, average U.S. household an extra $300 per month, $296 to be exact. $300 extra per month, that's about $3,600 per year. That's, you know, you're getting up to like $4,000 per year per American household, right? How many vacations have been canceled? How many, you know, family events have to be pushed back? How many decisions have to be made about where you can send your kid to school or whether you can afford, you know, the new car with the new safety features. Like, who knows what devastation this will have rolling out. But of course, that's all just small potatoes. That's really nothing compared to the fact that we're on the cusp of nuclear war, the fact that there is a war raging now in Ukraine with God knows how many dying on a daily basis, lives being destroyed again, just 2.5 million people fleeing for their lives out of that country. And it's all because of Joe Biden, 100%. I mean, the buck stops with him, right? I mean, it's his policies. It's the things that he's championed. So if you go back in time and ask Trevor Noah, if you could go back in time, would you vote for Donald Trump? What do you think his answer would be? Of course it would be no. Of course he would vote for Joe Biden again. He's not a racist after all. Of course he would vote. So this is the thing. This is the way this ideology works. And I know it's almost cliche at this point, but things become cliche because they're so true. Because they're so true, you say them over and over and over again, that the words almost become meaningless. But this is literal communism, literal socialism. And if you take a look at the Holodomor, right, in Ukraine, a purposeful starving of 2+ million Ukrainians, some numbers even higher, they say. Now, what brought that about? What brought the starvation about in communist countries? Are communists just inherently incapable of maintaining basic necessities? Yes, of course, but that's because you can't question the system. You can't question the intentions, because the intentions are always good. Of course, the intentions are to help people. Now, the outcome is everybody suffers, nobody is helped, and a few at the very top become extremely wealthy and powerful while the rest degrade into, you know, disaster and misery. But that's how it always goes. That's how it always is, right? So, you know, with starvation in Ukraine under the communists, it was a thing like, well, communists would, they would say that their system was superior, their system of getting rid of the private owners of the land and putting on, you know, communist, you know, whatever, holding it in common or whatever. And they'd say, you know, our system is so superior, we expect even more grain out of this area. Well, the fact was there'd be less grain out of that area, but you can't say that. You can't let anybody know that that's the case, or otherwise they might question the system. And so you tax them for the amount of grain you thought they were gonna make, which leaves them with no grain at the end of the day because they actually made significantly less. But the point is that you can't question the system. You can't question the intentions, right? So we're in this cyclical trap, this sand trap, right? Where we're just sinking in more and more and more, and they'll never question their intentions. They'll never be able to question the methods that they use because they have to uphold the system above all else. And so that's what we're experiencing here. And it'll just be, you know, well, they really wanted to do this really good thing, and then they did. We gave them everything, right? Leftists, I mean, there should be no question. Leftists have 100% power in this country right now. There is nothing that Republicans want and get. Republicans want a lot of stuff. We don't get any of it. Leftists get whatever the hell they want. Everything gets worse. And then the leftists point to it and go, see, we need change. We need more change. We need more power. We need more control. We need more of your tax dollars. We need more programs, more systems, more activists out there, because clearly we haven't done enough yet because everything's getting worse and worse. That's because we don't have enough power yet. So they'll keep aggregating power. They'll keep, you know, consolidating control, and things will keep getting worse. And they'll keep blaming you for it over and over and over and over again. It really doesn't matter. It really does not matter how bad things get. I swear to God. I mean, I'd love if we could actually talk to these people. I'd love to be able to talk to Trevor Noah and say, so now you'd vote for Trump. Are you saying that if you could go back in time, not only would you vote for Trump, but all of your campaigning for Biden, you would undo all of that? Now that you know, now that you realize what a bad idea it was, they wouldn't. They absolutely wouldn't. They'd say, well, no, of course not. Because going back in time, they would think we have to destroy Trump. Trump is evil. Of course he is. Obviously, he's going to get us into World War III. It's like, yeah, but you know that Joe Biden does get us into World War III. It wouldn't matter to them. They would continue to push this. And so, you know, it's not just Trevor Noah. We're not picking on him. It's everybody. It's all of these Democrats and leftists. Like, it's all of the regular people out there, like the person I was talking about earlier that goes, oh, I thought about voting Republican for the first time in my life. You think that guy's voting Republican? Of course not. You think the Californians who have destroyed their state and are now moving out of it and basically become refugees to red states, you think they're second-guessing their decisions? Of course not. No, they bring this stuff with them. They are pathological in their destruction. And it's completely insane. My God, we have a lot to talk about today. And, of course, Ukraine is on the menu. But also, crime here in America is just getting to comically bad levels. And I thought about this in the sense of, you know, obviously nothing is stopping this. No, there's no reversal to the trend, right? The bail reform laws, the defund the police movement. Like, Democrats will say fund the police because we're in an election cycle right now, but they're actually not doing anything to bring this about. And you can really see the true intentions of the Democrats by what actually gets done versus what they actually talk about. Because remember, defund the police was a insane, nonsensical, like nobody'd ever heard of it before 2020. And then within about 2 weeks, they were already defunding entire police precincts at a whim, right? If they want to, they can do it. What about the Haiti migrant crisis, right? Where you had like 10,000 Haiti migrants on the border and nobody knew, nobody could figure out what to do with it. And it was getting out of control. And then there was one, you know, lie from the mainstream media about whipping these people. And then the next day it was gone. It was just absolutely gone. All of the migrants were gone. All of their tents were gone. It was just like none of this is, it, none of this has to be. None of this is something that we have to like try to figure out how to do this. Like, what do we do here? Like, if they want to do it, they just do it. And if they don't want to do it, then they talk about wanting to do it and do nothing. Due to violent crime wave in Seattle, Amazon removing workers from downtown offices. McDonald's are like shutting down in Seattle as crime just continues to absolutely spiral out of control. But think about crime spiraling out of control combined with Americans becoming more and more poor and being unable to afford basic necessities, combined with the oncoming food supply chain crisis, which even John Kerry, you know, in all of his love and goodwill is warning us about, warning us of the damage that will be done by the food supply chain breaking down, and we'll have to have hundreds of millions of more refugees from the third world in our countries. You know, in Germany right now, I was trying to find it, but I'll try to locate it during one of these commercial breaks, but I couldn't find it before the show. But this weekend, there were people posting images from a supermarket in Germany talking about how they're being limited on the food supplies they can buy. That's right? Okay, you can only get this many loaves of bread today. You can only get this much grain. Because, you know, Ukraine, Russia, it's the breadbasket of the world. Russia's cut off trade. Ukraine is basically collapsing. Can't expect a big harvest there. I've covered it on American Journal, but like the soybean crop in South America has been, you know, their expectations been lowered continuously. So they're bringing about a total collapse of the food supply chain, which they love because they get to ration it then. And when you ration things, you get to decide who deserves food and who doesn't, who deserves health care and who doesn't, right? But then on top of that, you're going to have this massive crime wave where if things get really bad and people really are having trouble finding food, won't it be, you know, convenient for the people that want the destruction of this country to already have this massive criminal class just as career criminals robbing and stealing from everybody all the time? Like, you think it's going to get any better? You think any of this is going to get any better with the path that we're currently going down?
Nope.
No, it needs a massive reawakening. And of course, we're getting closer to World War III, obviously. And we'll talk about that. I'll talk about just all, you know, all this other just, I mean, it's all just insane. It's all just, I don't even know where to focus. Cause same thing, you know, Owen was talking about all the pedophilia going on here. You saw the videos of him getting attacked today by pedophiles in Austin. And this is the type of thing where it's just like, if you can't just on your own figure out what's going on here, I'm not sure I can help you. Like, if you really think that, because it's not even about what the leftists think about the leftists. It's what the leftists think about the right. Because we on the right, I don't know if we're just really bad at messaging or if just we don't have the outlets to get the message out there. The leftists are all like pre-programmed, like they just get the talking points in their sleep somehow and then just repeat them verbatim. I don't get how good they are at messaging this sort of stuff. But you've got, you know, Florida putting out this bill that's just like, hey, don't talk to kids about sex. Don't talk to 8-year-olds or younger about sex. Don't talk to them about homosexual activities. Don't talk to them about heterosexual activities. Don't talk to them about transgenderism. It's public school. Teach them how to color and to paint and to read words, right? It's a very easy, obvious thing. But go talk to any leftists out there. They think that somehow Florida is like criminalizing children, like they're gonna start throwing children in jail for not wearing the right gendered clothes. It makes no sense. But this is what they believe. This is what they actually think is going on. All you have to do is listen to the leftists. That's one thing our side kind of doesn't do a lot because it's unbearable. It's unbearable to hear these people talk. It's unbearable to hear very stupid people very confidently, you know, talk about things that they just don't understand at all. But you got to do it. You got to do it because you got to understand where these people are coming from and what they think they're standing up against. They think they're standing up against Darth Vader and Hitler still to this day, even though, again, it's proven time and time again that they have no idea what they're talking about. So I don't know if you people heard of this. Prostasia. Prostasia.org. It sounds like a venereal disease, and it might as well be. The stigma itself can lead to harm. An interview with researcher and author Alan Walker of the Prostasia Foundation. Alan Walker is an assistant professor at the Old Dominion University in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice. Their research focuses on institutional harms, especially those created by our criminal processing, immigration and detention, and mental health care systems. We spoke to Alan about their book. Now, it's one person, so again, we're getting a little hints as to what this might be about. Spoke to Alan about his book, her book, no, their book, A Long Dark Shadow, Minor Attracted People and Their Pursuit of Dignity. The book is a study of a non-offending minor attracted persons, a group that hasn't been discussed a lot, either in the academy or in popular culture. You can see the video of the conversation at this website. Even the title of your book is pretty controversial, they say, because the subtitle is Minor Attracted People and Their Pursuit of Dignity, and many people are concerned that the designation of Minor Attracted People, or MAPS, suggests that it's okay to be attracted to children, or they worry that the term suggests that pedophilia is a sexual orientation, which they worry is a slander on LGBT people. Yeah. I mean, they're open about it now. This isn't speculation. This isn't something that may be coming down the pipe. They are now, they have foundations, they hold interviews, they're writing books about what they want to do, about the fact that they think pedophilia should be treated just like homosexuality or transgenderism is now being treated. In other words, it should be taught to your children as equal to any other type of love, as normal, as actually beneficial, and as a good thing. So that's what's happening right now as we speak. And again, it's almost like I'm a free speech absolutist to a point, right? Because this isn't free speech. This is victimization of children. So I don't know what to do here. Because the other type of thing is just like, it's like on our side, we'll sit here and we'll go, hey, look, you know, we think the election was stolen. We have all of this evidence that, you know, these votes weren't counted correctly, or this vote collecting procedure is completely illegal and flies in the face of our established norms of electoral, you know, security and confidence. And then they come back, oh, you're trying to perform a coup and you're terrorists. And it's just like, I mean, is there a time where we can just stop being reasonable? Because we keep trying to be reasonable. And I keep thinking back to 2020. And it was like, you know, back in 2020, we never said arrest everybody in, you know, who's peacefully protesting against police brutality. That was never our stance, but maybe it should have been. I don't know. I mean, it's just like anybody else having these little conundrums, these little moral quandaries that you're into where you go, well, no, look, all we wanted was for you people to arrest the violent, insane people firebombing police precincts and smashing museum artifacts and burning bookstores with, you know, antique books. Like, stop the people doing the violent stuff. That's all we want. But the way that gets portrayed is, oh, you want to shut down people's free speech. You want to destroy these people's ability to stand up. You hate free speech in America. I don't know. Because when we try to peacefully protest and we're terrorists. So it's just like, I guess, you know, this is how extremism happens, right? You just go back and forth. You try to be peaceful. You try to keep just explaining your side of things that's perfectly reasonable and actually true and based off of facts. You can have all of the articles in front of you. And they're just like, look, you're a terrorist. I don't care what you have to say. It's like, all right, I guess that's just where we need to be. I guess we could go back in time. Maybe Trump would have just declared an insurrection act and just sent out the National Guard and just started a civil war. Like, is that what that would have been better? This is what they're pushing us towards. Just complete, complete insanity. So it's like, yeah, you know what? I don't want to have to, like, have the government policing sexuality. What a horrific outcome. What a horrible thing to come about. But they're doing it anyway, and they're targeting your children. So I don't know. Maybe we all need to sort of, you know, change how we think about this. And maybe, you know, liberty only operates in a ecology of virtue. Maybe when you have a bunch of despicable scumbags operating in the open, it's time to take a second guess about all these things. This is what I think. I don't know. I'm just sort of thinking out loud here. Hope we don't take any of this too seriously. It's all ridiculous and absurd. Let me just read some of the headlines I've got from today, right? Quick little jaunt through the fields of the insane. Global social credit industry, social credit system infrastructure represents $16.1 billion opportunity by 2026. Russia warns it could start targeting Western arms convoys entering Ukraine, which, like, of course, obviously it will. Why would they not? I would, right? Oh, we're not involved in the war. We're just sending arms to your enemies. Yeah, you're a part of the war now. We're going to bomb you. Obviously, it's going to happen. United Nations Security Council met over Russian claims of biolabs in Ukraine, where they presented all the documentation and showed all of the evidence that America had been creating biological weapons there in Ukraine, and we're probably planning on releasing at least one, and they're still probably planning on it. In fact, you can see the evidence absolutely everywhere. I just had the, Putin could unleash biological weapons seized from Ukraine lab, experts fear. So we don't have biological weapons in Ukraine, but the labs that Putin has seized do have biological weapons in them. Like, does this make sense to anybody? Of course not. It's all complete nonsense. It's all utter and complete nonsense. And, you know, somebody on Twitter. Oh, look, I have it up right here. What is with these people who vehemently distrust the corporate press, giving the benefit of the doubt to completely unsubstantiated posts on social media? We need to be careful with all the information we come across, even when it jives with our established belief. This is in response to me posting a conversation, a text chain I'd gotten from a friend who said, bro, they've thwarted the timeline of another pandemic by capturing these bioweapons labs. They're telling everyone that they found a flu with a 50% mortality, for example. God has answered millions of people's prayers right now. This person thinks this is just a completely unsubstantiated claim on social media that because it jives with my preconceived notions, that I just believe it wholeheartedly, right? Nothing could be farther from the truth. How did we get to this point? Well, we got to this point by years and years ago, people pointing out that America was doing dangerous research in Ukraine. We got to this point after the Wuhan lab was the source of the COVID pandemic, and we uncovered that early on. And then we looked at where else biolabs were, and we saw that there were a lot in Ukraine. And then Russia claimed that that's what they were doing in their special military operation. And then that was confirmed by Victoria Nuland, who's in the State Department. And then that was reversed by the administration, who said, no, that's totally false and not true. We don't have bioweapons in Ukraine. And then Russia held a UN Security Council meeting where they showed the evidence of it. So it's like, I don't know, people just think like you either just blindly believe one thing or blindly believe another, when in reality, all you have to do is follow the facts. All you have to do is just have the intelligence to just follow a chain of events, to just notice a pattern, to look at a headline and go, this is what this really means. Take the headline, take what they want you to think about from it. Think about who is telling you this, why they want you to think that, what actual evidence is there that they're purporting. Like, this headline's kind of just a perfect example. Putin could unleash biological weapons seized from Ukraine lab, experts fear. Oh, the experts fear things. No, oh no, not the experts. Said Russian troops could storm a lab and use it as a base to unleash a bioweapon. So what do we know from this? What we know is that the Ukrainians have bioweapons. We also know from our previous reporting that these bioweapons were funded by the Defense Department here in America. Okay? We also know that they've done this over and over again, just like they did in Syria, where you saw these headlines, oh, people fear that Assad is going to use a chemical weapon against his own people. And then sure enough, a chemical weapon gets used against Assad's people. And everybody here in America goes, this is it. It's a red line. It's time to go to war. Except, of course, the OPCW investigated it and discovered it was a false flag attack of the rebels on their own people to try to blame it on Assad to try to get America involved. You don't think that's going to happen here? Like, this only makes sense if you believe their pre-established lies of Putin is a madman who is just completely insane and doing whatever he wants for no particular reason whatsoever, that Ukraine is completely not corrupt at all. Ignore the reporting from last year, by the way. Just, you know, if you want to know, like, how crazy things are, just search Ukraine. You know, Google News has this amazing function where you can go back and choose the time in which you want to find results. So just search Ukraine and just set the results for any time prior to like midway through 2021. And you get all these headlines about Ukraine is the most corrupt country in the world. Ukraine, you know, the Ukraine president is a thug. Ukraine president, eliminates unfriendly media outlets and imprisons his opponents. Like, you see all the truth before you know, the signal went out. Again, I don't get how good they are at this. I don't understand it. Jack Posobiec even, you know, reposted a tweet from Ro Khanna talking about, you know, what giant thugs and neo-Nazis Ukrainians were last year. Just last year. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to open up the phone lines on the other side, folks. Remember, you support us by going to InfoWarsStore.com. Get something that will improve your own life and keep us on air, keep us alive in this fight. Support this wartime broadcast. All right, welcome back, folks. It is Sunday Night Live, InfoWars.com, band.video. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines if you want to call in. The number to dial, 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call here. We'll be taking your calls for the next hour and a half while I'm still here. Remember to go to InfoWarsStore.com to support everything that we do here, as we are, of course, under greater attack than we've ever been before. And there's a reason. It's because we give you what might be called the unified theory of conspiracy. Been talking about this a lot. I've been thinking about it a lot. Because that's really what's needed, is the understanding that all of this stuff is not separate. It's not all, you know, you don't need a different theory for every little thing that's going on. It's all part of the same process. It's all part of the same conspiracy. It's all part of the same movement by the world elite to take complete control and have a global superstate, corporate superstate, over all of us. It's really not that complicated. It's actually pretty easy. And the way I describe this, if you're not an American journalist, or I'll just repeat myself here, you have the, like, before the heliocentric solar system model, you had the geocentric solar system model, and they had models for everything. They had sort of algorithms, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, that could predict things. They could predict when eclipses would happen. They would predict the placement of planets and stars in the sky. They could predict all this sort of stuff. But it was all based on the idea that Earth was the center of their rotation. And so none of them matched up, right? The algorithm for Mars was different than the algorithm for Saturn. It was all, and you know, but you could still explain each one. You go, no, see, this is the way Saturn moves. This is the way Mars moves. And it's all different. And then you have the heliocentric model, and it's just, shoop, it all falls into place. It all falls into perfect place. You go, okay, Earth is also rotating around the sun. That's why all these orbits seem so crazy and nonsensical. It's because their orbit is actually around the sun, and everything just becomes this perfect mathematical, like, it's very simple and nice, and everything makes sense, and you really only need one model, the heliocentric model, to explain the movement of all the planets rather than an individual one to explain all the others, right? And so that's what we're sort of looking for here. We're trying to suss out, we're trying to figure out, is how all of these different little conspiracies all play into the larger, greater conspiracy, which is, again, not that complicated or confusing. And this story, I don't have time to get into even a small portion of it, but I suggest you go read it at Unlimited Hangout. Dr. Klaus Schwab, or How the CFR Taught Me to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And this traces Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum's history back to Henry Kissinger and what else? The CIA. So she starts by saying, the World Economic Forum's recorded history has been manufactured to appear as though the organization was a strictly European creation. But this isn't so. In fact, Klaus Schwab had an elite American political team working in the shadows that aided him in creating the European-based globalist organization. If you have decent knowledge of Klaus Schwab's history, you'll know that he attended Harvard in the 1960s, where he would meet then-professor Henry A. Kissinger, a man with whom Schwab would form a lifelong friendship. But as with most information from the annals of World Economic Forum history books, what you've been told is not the full story. In fact, Kissinger would recruit Schwab at the International Seminar at Harvard, which had been funded by the U.S.'s Central Intelligence Agency. Although the funding was exposed the year in which Klaus Schwab left Harvard, the connection has largely gone unnoticed until now. So, of course, you have the CFR and the World Economic Forum getting its initial funding at Harvard from the CIA. In 1950, Kissinger would graduate from Harvard with a degree in political science, where he would study under William Gandel Elliott, who would serve, who would be the eventual political advisor to six U.S. presidents, who would serve as a mentor to Zbigniew Brzezinski and Pierre Trudeau, amongst others. So again, this is not, it's not something new. It's not like the World Economic Forum just popped out of nowhere in 2020 to take